We have these readings to illustrate what it means to live in a community of faith, multi-faiths, and how we come to understand that. And as I was thinking about what I wanted to say this year, I thought, how did I come to understand that? And it sometimes comes in the most unexpected ways. I grew up in a small town in southwestern Pennsylvania in an area of abandoned coal mines and coke ovens. And there were lots of folks who were happy to tell us how great the town used to be and how on Saturday night you could barely pass on the sidewalks for all the people who were there. My town didn't look like that when I was growing up, but it didn't matter. It was home. Near my home was a creek, Connell Run, that flowed next to Hossie's Pond, where we used to catch fish and always throw them back in because it was so polluted. And above the creek and the pond, there rose a woods, which was part of the Chestnut Ridge, which surrounded the town, which was part of the Allegheny Range. There are few places in America more beautiful in the fall than the Allegheny Mountains, especially where the Youghiogheny River cuts a gorge and provides some of the best whitewater rafting in the United States. It was home. That's all I knew, and that's all that mattered, because home meant familiarity and safety. Everyone knew everyone else, and as is true in your hometown, most people tried to know one another's business as well. As a young boy, I loved to cross the tar and gravel road and go across the street to visit Mrs. Brothers. Now, her name was Sarah, but even as an adult, I never could call her that. She was always Mrs. Brothers, and she was like an adopted grandma to my sisters and me. Her door was always open to me, even when she was out in the garden working and I came over after school and went plopped down in front of the TV. TV always looked better in Mrs. Brothers' house. And she would come upstairs and say, I thought I heard you there. So even from a very early age, I knew what it meant to be truly welcomed and truly loved for just the guy I was. My town was far from perfect, but it was the center of my existence until I left for college. And even at that point, I only went across the state line a couple hours to a place that was not all that different from where I grew up. But in college, I met people of ethnicities and religions that I had never been exposed to before. I was especially fascinated by those of other faith traditions. Now, the people I hung around with, we were part of a pretty conservative Christian group. They said, you know, be careful exposing yourself to those other traditions. I wasn't worried about that, nor was I uncomfortable, and I started thinking about why that might be true. When I was an adolescent, I was taking God and country classes with other Boy Scouts from my church, and these classes were led by our pastor. He was a jovial guy, trained at Boston University School of Theology, and he had to live out his brand of 1960s liberalism in the conservative town in which he found himself. One day during a class, one of the scouts made an offhand crack about another religion. And our pastor stopped the presentation he was making, and he gently admonished each of us to respect the beliefs and traditions of others. He did it in such a loving way, we didn't feel that we'd been reprimanded or hollered at in any way, but more like he was encouraging us to strive to be more understanding of those whose beliefs were different from our own. I guess that lesson was never lost on me when I went away to college and divinity school and served my first parishes, and then when I got to do my dream work of working in higher education. One of the best things I get to do is work with people of other faith traditions. Perhaps it's because I've learned so much from them, but I also think they remind me of how small is the world in which I was raised, even though I will always have the indelible print of that small town upon me. It's a gift to remember the things we are taught when we are growing up, but there is a temptation to continue to live within those ideological boundaries because the familiar sometimes seems much safer. Diana Eck grew up in Bozeman, Montana, raised in the same Christian denomination as was I. During her junior year of college, she went to study in Benares, India, her first time abroad, and she said that for the first time in her life, she felt as if she had found her spiritual home, as if she'd been searching for such a place for her whole life. Eck went on to a distinguished career as a professor of comparative religions at Harvard with a specialty in Eastern religions. In her landmark book, Encountering God, a spiritual journey from Bozeman to Benares, she states that she didn't feel any need to convert from her Christian tradition in which she was raised. If anything, she says that her study of other religions and encounters with people of other faiths challenged, changed, and deepened her own Christian faith, and that she simply sees her faith as part of a larger tapestry of faith traditions that seek to bring meaning to our world. She's put that realization to work, serving as the chair of the Interfaith Relations Committee of the National Council of Churches, and she served as director of the Pluralism Project at Harvard since 1991. I must tell you that her book was a revelation to me when I read it years ago, and when I heard her offer a couple lectures a few weeks ago, I realized she continues to inspire me. I've always felt that our religious traditions contain within them an element of common ground. I can't say exactly what that common ground is, but if I may quote a Supreme Court justice and apply that quote to a totally different context, I know it when I see it. I saw it when I gathered with the Interfaith Council here at Lafayette and felt the enthusiasm as we all sat and planned joint programming together. I saw it this year when I attended a Shabbat service at Hillel and realized that one of the leaders was a Catholic student from Newman who considers Hillel her second spiritual home. I saw it in the civility rally this year when many people spoke and urged us to celebrate our differences rather than allow them to divide us. I saw it when our Jewish and Muslim students got all excited about doing a joint program together this semester. I observed it when our Christian and Jewish students celebrated an interfaith worship service a few weeks ago as a part of Holocaust Remembrance Week. Now, there are those who will say that what we do in religious life here at Lafayette does not reflect life in the real world, and that the only reason we have this interfaith cooperation is because we live up here in the Lafayette bubble. It could be hard to argue with that, because the interfaith cooperation that is found on college and university campuses throughout the United States is not always replicated in the towns that surround them. Not all of our cities are models of interfaith cooperation and harmony. Lewis Mumford once defined cities as energy converted to culture. So I guess the question in our American context has become, what kind of energy has been converted to what kind of culture? Since September 11, 2001, we've been conditioned to see the other in those whose religious traditions and ethnicities differ from our own. So I guess in some cases at least, the energy that's been converted to culture has been negative energy. As a nation, we've become more suspicious of so-called outsiders. And it's not difficult to acknowledge the enormous impacts that the World Trade Center attacks have had on our national psyche. I know there are people present here today for whom the losses were personal and the pain remains. 10 years later, we continue trying to heal as a nation, healing while not forgetting our losses. In my little town, I don't think there are very many people who knew anyone directly affected by the World Trade Center attacks. But the crash of Flight 93 in Shanksville happened just 45 minutes away from where I grew up. So it was real for them. And for them, I think it served to amplify the attitude, which is typical in many places in the United States. There is a general distrust of the other, and especially the religious other. When friends and family members were viewing a video a few years ago that my wife and I made when we visited our daughter in England, there was an audible gasp when the image of a young woman wearing a hijab appeared on the screen. Now, the context of the video was the bustling marketplace in Leeds, and the young Muslim woman was just another shopper there. But for those watching the video, she represented the other. For there's not a Muslim community in or near my hometown. And I know for a fact there are some folks in my hometown that say that people of other religious traditions represent strange ways of thinking from lands far away, and they should be watched. How surprised they might be then to read a study by Stuart Chandler, a professor at Indiana University of Pennsylvania. By the way, in Western Pennsylvania, we name our universities after other places, Indiana, California, and Edinburgh. At Indiana, he runs this project where students do field work. They go out and study local religious communities. Some students from that project combined their research with work done in his world religions classes to create a presentation entitled Muslim, Hindu, Buddhist, Sikh, the surprising religious landscape of Western Pennsylvania. I try to imagine how surprised Mrs. Brothers would be if she were still living today and knew of this religious diversity. She'd probably be a bit wary, because such a diversity was not ever a part of her world. She was a lifelong member of the Evangelical United Brethren and then the United Methodist Church after the merger, and most of her friends and neighbors belonged to Christian denominations. But I thought of a way that if I were to try to talk to her about this and help her and myself gain a better understanding of our religious community that surrounded us, I could take a page from the people of Houston, Texas, and host what they called Amazing Faith Dialogue Dinners. When a Muslim family in Houston had vandalism and graffiti done to their home, strangely enough, they thought they had not been good enough neighbors in getting to know the other neighbors. And so they sent notes to their friends and neighbors and knocked on doors telling them they were going to host a dinner at their home. And they were all invited. And when folks came, they were encouraged to talk about their faith traditions and how those traditions dictate how they live their lives. So I started thinking, Mrs. Brothers and her husband always had the biggest and best vegetable garden in our neighborhood. And I grew up eating beans, snap peas, tomatoes, and corn that had been picked literally moments before. So what if I asked Mrs. Brothers to pick something from the garden to make one of her favorite dishes and then invite her to bring it to a gathering of folks just a few blocks away? Well, where I grew up, we didn't have blocks. We had alleys and fields, but you get my meaning. She was a very shy person by nature. And like everyone who lived in my hometown, she grew up with prejudices and suspicions of those who appeared to be different. But I also remember her as a really, really good and loving person, one of the hardest working people I've ever known, and she lived a life of what can only be called true simplicity. She welcomed me into her home from the first day we moved onto McCoy Hollow Road. And I believe that that same hospitable and generous spirit would eventually come to welcome those whose lives and religions differed greatly from her own. She would just need to get to know them a little bit, and it would take a little work on her part, and it would take some time. But I think it would happen. Pennsylvania was founded on the principle of religious freedom and acceptance of diversity. However, back then there was not much religious diversity between Judaism and Christianity in Pennsylvania. And it's only been relatively recently that Pennsylvania has come to be understood also as a home to communities including Buddhists, Muslims, Sikhs, and Jains. When Eck was doing her research into what causes us to distrust those of other faith traditions, she interviewed a gentleman who said, "I'm not bigoted. I just don't like change." Fear of change sometimes makes us suspicious and likely identify those who represent change as the other. And you know, I think that's what our pastor was trying to caution us against that day in our God and Country class. Making fun of other religious traditions, and back then, religious traditions we knew nothing about, was the first step in the development of mistrust. A few years later, after Boy Scouts, after that event, I was attending a high school basketball game with two of my friends. I remember the embarrassment I felt for the friend next to me when he made a bigoted statement to another friend who was Jewish. I recall that as soon as he made the mistake, there was an uncomfortable silence and it seemed as if all the oxygen went out of the room. He then turned to the friend and he said he was sorry. He said, "I don't know what made me make such a statement." The other friend, who had been the one offended, responded by saying that he didn't know what made him make that statement either. And he didn't understand why people in general hold prejudices like that. He didn't say it with anger. Just sadness, I think. I took from that encounter a sense of awe at the forbearance of the one who'd been offended, the embarrassment of the one who had offended him, and a real sincere desire to try not to put my foot in my mouth and offend anyone in that way ever. The preamble to the United States Constitution begins with the words, "We the people." That's a broad phrase. And over the more than 200 years since it was written, it's come to mean we, the people of many more nationalities, races, and religious traditions than our founding fathers and mothers ever could have imagined. And I would add, in the truest understanding of pluralism, it also means we, the people who have no religious traditions or beliefs, because they've also been persecuted over the years in our country. Since September 11, 2001, organizations have sprung up that have as their not-so-secret agendas the fostering of mistrust and suspicion between the religious majorities in America and those perceived as other. I won't dignify these groups by naming them, but you can read more about them by visiting the Pluralism Project website at pluralism.org. They play on fear and mistrust and the identity of the other as the root of what is wrong with America. You can hear their words daily on any cable channel or website, but I'm not ending my talk by focusing on their efforts to tear down. I want to close my remarks by sharing a memory of something that happened 2 years ago here at Lafayette. The Muslim prayer room in Hogue Hall had fallen into disuse and was looking rather shabby. Sakina Salem, who sits here on the rostrum, and one of her best friends, Pooja Shah, who may be out there somewhere. Pooja, are you out there? I'm going to assume you are. They decided to take it upon themselves to clean up that room. So Sakina and I went to the local hardware store and courageously bought paint and brushes and supplies. And then Sakina went to the Interfaith Council, and she said we could use a couple of volunteers to help with this project. Every hand in the room went up, and Sakina said, no, I just need a few people. Long story short, she got much more help than she ever wanted or asked for, as every member of every religious organization and group on campus was a part of that project, and it was done in a weekend. That's how we do things at Lafayette. And that's how we do things in religious life at Lafayette. We get together. We share meals. We cooperate on projects. We talk about our differences. We marvel at Father Charles' culinary skills, Bob Wiener's hugs and laughter, Javad Tavakoli's kindness and his gentle dedication, and Joel Martin's energy and welcoming smile. We work together and we accomplish great things with our students, not because Lafayette is not the real world, but because for our students, the real world must begin here. We the people begins here. Amen.